Hi, everyone. Welcome to Your Baby's Brilliant Brain. I'm Dr. Christine Addison, or Dr. Chris, as my patients call me. And with me,
Dr. Toxel Ruck.
Hi. Well, we're so glad you joined us here today. We're here to help you with your baby's brain development from conception through the first few years of life. And we're trying to touch on all the aspects that you should be aware of and things that you can do proactively. And that is why we have on a special guest today that Dr. Toxel is going to introduce.
So we are bringing to you today Dr. Derek Tong. So thank you so much for coming on today. I'm going to give a little bit of background, and just a little. His background is extensive and amazing, and we couldn't be more grateful to have him here. So you graduated from the Southern California College of Optometry at Marshall B. Ketchum University. You also completed residency training in pediatric optometry and vision therapy. So you've also been practicing optometry for over 20 years and received fellowships from the American Academy of Optometry, the College of Optometrists and Vision Development, and the Neuro-Optometric Rehabilitation Association. Okay. You're also board certified by the American Board of Optometry, and you have faculty appointments as adjunct clinical assistant professor at both Marshall B. Ketchum University and the Western University of Health Sciences. And you're also the founder, clinic director, and postdoctorate supervisor of the Center for Vision Development Optometry, Inc., in Pasadena, California. So you're pretty close to us, which is awesome. So this center focuses on helping people of all ages with learning difficulties, developmental delays, autism, lazy eyes, concussions, brain injury, and many other vision disorders. So professionally, you're also a trustee and a past president of the San Gabriel Valley Optometric Society. And for over 20 years, you've also lectured at national optometric conferences. You've published numerous articles in scientific journals in the area of vision development, therapy, and rehabilitation. And as I said, that's a condensed version.
And then personally, I met Dr. Tong, I can't even remember how long ago. It might have even been like 20 years ago when he was having a little meet and greet seminar type of thing. I think you had parents there too. It wasn't necessarily for doctors, but I love the fact that you are all about education, and that's where we kind of jive, because I love educating people about what it is exactly that you do and red flags to look for. And I've been referring patients to Dr. Tong for about that period of time, because I understand this relationship between vision, and it isn't just about the eyes. But Dr. Tong, I want you to comment on this, and we're going to hear a little bit about how you got into all this. But I have heard that really the eyes are an extension of the brain.
Yes, so thank you so much for the kind introduction. I'm so happy to be here today and to share my knowledge with the audience, to give them some information about the connection between the eye, the brain, and development. Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm the clinic director and founder of my practice, Center for Vision Development in Pasadena. Been doing that for over 20 years now. Our focus has always been to help people of all ages develop the necessary visual skills for maximal success at home, at school, at work, and play. Yeah. And these days, as the environment is changing, especially for the academic environment, that becomes even more important. The visual demand for children these days are quite different from that about a year ago. Yeah, so we're seeing a lot more computer-related eye strain, visual stress-related problem that we need to address. Our mission has been to improve vision and changing lives. So that has been very rewarding for us to see, by addressing the visual component, our patients are able to become more successful. You're asking me what I have done in the past that have led to the work. Growing up, I work with children in various capacities. As a high school and college student, I've been tutoring different subjects, science, math, children in elementary school, high school, even college. And I found that to be pretty satisfying. I think just like chiropractors who specialize working children, seeing the children grow and improve is always a great experience.
Well, what led you to an interest even in becoming an optometrist? I mean, why did you end up?
Why the eyes?
Yeah, why the eyes?
Yeah, so I always think about wanting to be in the healthcare field. So during the college years, I also work as a camp counselor. In a summer camp, it's a week long, it's a fun time. And also being able to interact with children extensively, that was a great feeling. So among the different professions, I found that being an optometrist, a doctor of optometry, I get the same a way to interact patient, not only once a year, but in cases of a vision development, we get to work with them closely and see them grow over a period of time. Yeah, so it's a great feeling. And in terms of vision development, babies, we know they have a brilliant brain, and they actually have to learn and see over a period of time, just like the other skills, the speech, the language, gross motor or fine motor. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen right away. So they need to learn to focus their eyes, to explore the environment, to move them accurately, to use them together, and finally gathering all this visual information, make sense out of it for the brain to process and understand the world around them. So eye and vision problems, if they exist, can affect the vision development. So as a doctor of optometrists who focus on children's vision development, there are three main components. One is prevention, one is enhancement, and one is the rehab component, yeah. So prevention is important because according to the American Optometric Association, as many as 1 in 5 children has vision problems that will interfere with learning in school. So 20%, 1 in 5. Some of the signs and symptoms, early signs and symptoms parents can look out for to prevent problems from getting worse could be if they see red or pink eyes, meaning eye infections. If they have excessive tearing, that means a possible blocked tear duct. If they see one eye turning in or out or not aligning, that could be an eye teeming or eye muscle problem going on. If they are extremely light sensitive, that could mean the eye pressure is too high, such as a congenital form of glaucoma. And if they have an appearance of a white pupil, let's say when you're taking a picture in one or both eyes, that could be a sign of the presence of a growth inside the eyes too. So those are some red flags to look for, yeah.
Yeah, with digital photography, we don't get red eye too much.
That's right.
That's an old time photographic issue. There's many, especially if you have light eyes. So I often had red eyes. I had demon eyes as a child. And this is a reflex, actually, that we check. It's called the red reflex. And that is to make sure we're actually shining a light, and it looks like you're catching the reflection of those blood vessels in the back of the eye. So if you don't see that, as you said, it could be an issue that could be a problem. And you were talking about some of the things to look for, which I like. Is there a certain age that you recommend parents take their children in for their first eye exam?
Yes, the American Optometric Association suggested babies as young as 6 to 12 months old would begin their first vision assessment, yeah. So with the initial vision assessment, there are several components we look at. We look at whether the eyes are focusing properly. So with our instrument, we can actually measure the retina, the eye reflex, to determine if they have significant nearsightedness, farsightedness, unequal focusing, astigmatism that may require an early correction.
Astigmatism. You throw the infer at that. Let's just clarify that for our listeners who might not know what that is.
Okay. Astigmatism is a condition when the front of the eye, the first layer, the outer layer, the cornea, instead of being perfectly round, it's more oval in shape. And when it's more oval, the image that's formed at the back of the eye inside, which is the retina, becomes distorted. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's definitely a detailed description.
So that can be more of a structural difference. And you can't, can you see that visually? Or do you have to do a specific test to bring your child in an optometrist?
Great question, yeah. So you're right, there's a structural problem leading to a functional problem. And most parents, most children, this is not something visible, yeah. So it would be up to the eye doctor to do the measurements and determine if it's present, yeah. Probably just like chiropractic, there are some visible signs and symptoms, but it does require the chiropractor to check on the spinal cord for any misalignment, yeah.
Right, and is this a typical, so you have an eye doctor, are you looking at things a little bit differently than say a eye doctor who hasn't had some of the training that you've had? In other words, looking at vision, whether a baby can see or not, versus are they using their brain optimally to make sure that that vision is, you know, here's the thing, and you're going to talk about this, but from what I understand of vision, it's not just a simple, oh, a picture comes in through the eyes and it goes into our brain. There's actually a lot that goes on with vision. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know I have a book, you probably are familiar with it, called Neurology of Eye Movements. And it's about, I don't know, a couple of inches thick with the smallest writing I have ever seen before in my life. And I'm going to go blind reading it anyway. And it's very complicated with eye movements. So you're not just looking at can the baby see or not, but talk about some of the things that you're looking for.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, because within each eye, there are six sets of muscle, one on top, one on the bottom, one on the right, one on the left, and two diagonal. And with these six set of muscles between the two eyes, they have to aim and point together. Otherwise, the person will be seeing double vision. So during our evaluation, we always look at the eye alignment, at the close distance, at the far distance, and making sure they can move in all directions without any restrictions. And also checking on the eye health, both the outside and inside the eyes here. So a lot of parents may not know it is possible to do a pretty comprehensive evaluation on a baby when the baby is not able to give us any answer yet. Many parents, they're familiar with their own experience, going to the eye doctor, looking at the eye chart, using the instruments, one or two, which one's better. So that is to measure one component, which is the far vision, how someone can see clearly, whether they have good eyesight for driving, seeing the board, or looking at road signs. But as you know, vision is more than just one aspect. There are 17 crucial visual skills that are important for daily function and vision development. Yeah. Mm.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what those 17 are?
Yeah, just, like 17.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Complicated. You picked a very complicated field, I have to say. You probably didn't even know what you were getting into when you decided to be an optometrist.
Yeah, so you're right, yeah. So in addition to just doing the measurement, checking, and prescribing lenses, we do a lot of work on diagnosing the problem and looking for opportunity to help the person develop, whether it's through developmental activities or vision therapy. And you're right, and not all eye doctors feel comfortable working with young children. A lot of my colleagues, they would only work with school-age children who can sit sit straight in the chair, sit steadily behind the instrument, and they would refer all the younger patients for us to evaluate. Yeah, so it is fun to do, and there are many visual skills. Just to give you some example, there's eye alignment, there's visual focusing, there's eye tracking, there's depth perception, there's color vision, there's the external eye health, there's the internal eye health, there's the intraocular pressure, meaning eye pressure inside the eyes, there's peripheral vision, there's side vision, there's the pupil reflex, and there's also focusing accuracy, as well as being able to change focus from near and far. So just to give you some examples of what those 17 crucial visual skills are.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Well, and so now going into, so you really focus on so the prevention part is good, because I'm sure you can head off a lot of potential learning difficulties that end up happening even before the children are in school. When you're working with these, you know, developmental delays, the lazy eye, what are some common therapies that you guys do in your center? Is it very instrument based, or is it based on working with the neurology of the brain with certain exercise? What kind of do you do for these, for some of the more common issues that you see?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question in terms of the treatment. It all depends on the diagnosis. Yeah, just like with chiropractic care, you start with the initial assessment to determine what the problems would be, whether the person may need chiropractic adjustment, craniosacral, or homeopathy. Same with vision, too. It all depends on the individual. Everyone is different. There are some parents who come to us for consultation because they suspect a problem, or because there's a family history of lazy eye turn. They just want to rule out the problem, yeah. Or some may have a child who has been to our office with vision problems. They want to make sure the baby or the younger sibling is normal too. So for those ones, our goal is to rule out the problem, make sure everything is developing properly. And quite often, once the problems are ruled out, if there's nothing specific, we would monitor them on a routine basis to make sure the eyes are developing properly. We also have other people with vision problems, such as what we talked about, astigmatism, the nearsightedness, the farsightedness, or unequal focus. That needs lenses or glasses to help them focus properly, so the retina can receive a clear image and the brain will be able to process those images clearly and learn to see clearly. So glasses is always one option for those who need it.
So do you always prescribe glasses, or do you try to do things a bit differently where you get the balance of the muscles of the eyes and that accommodation and that information being able to see, because the eye has to change its shape from near to far. And if we can work with that, are there ways you can work with that so that they may not even need to use glasses, or maybe have the glasses just be a temporary situation?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. And parents ask that all the time. I think it depends on the situation and individual. There's some when the prescription is so high that the glasses are probably absolutely necessary. And there's some that are on the borderline that we could potentially monitor. There's some that have eye convergence problem. Let's say their eyes are not pointing at the same location easily at the near distance. So those ones could benefit instead of glasses with vision therapy to train the eyes to work together. So those would be weekly sessions, just like physical therapy, but for the eyes to learn to coordinate. Yeah. So it's a combination of many different options and approach. And based on the evaluation, we let the parent know what the different options are and what we recommend. Yeah.
And so for some of these learning difficulties, so let's say with like a vision disorder like dyslexia, Do you work then with the brain and the eyes in that case, or try to see if there is a disconnect between how the brain is interpreting what the eyes are bringing in? Or is that a entirely different type of a field or issue?
Yeah, that's a great question too. A lot of our patients who come to our office, they're also diagnosed with another learning disability or specific reading disorder such as dyslexia. And they usually receive education intervention, but the parents or the referring psychologist or doctor or educator have concerns about the visual processing. Yeah. So visual processing is the ability to understand what you see and make sense and remember it. So we would specifically look into the visual processing aspect to see if the child have problems with either visual memory, meaning recalling what you see, visual sequential memory, meaning recalling things in the right order, which is important in learning to spell words, visual discrimination, so that when they learn the letters and numbers, they will understand which one is which and not getting them mixed up. And also there's visual spatial relationship, meaning the left and right, certain letters, are they pointing up, pointing down, is it a B or D? So to be able to determine that. And they would also need to have a good visual motor integration skills. Visual motor means the eyes and the hands, whether they can coordinate when writing. So when they're writing, are they writing it in the same size? Are they writing big on some letters, more on the other ones? Are they going uphill or downhill, not staying on the line, or whether they can space properly? So we look into those aspects to see if there's a visual component, because if there's a visual component, those are the things that we could possibly address. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's so much more than what people consider optometry, where it's like you go and you do the lens analysis to see, you know, where you can see near, far, or astigmatism is the main other one. And again, that's a whole structural aspect that people forget about. But yeah, vision is so much more complicated than people think. So to get somebody that's really looking at all the different aspects of it, I think offers a lot more, and hopefully it's able to help people kind of understand more that process as well. Cause I'm sure as you're explaining to them what's going on, they're kind of like, what are you talking about? We've never heard of this, you know, aspect of it. So now going into, cause I noticed you also help people out with things like concussions and brain injury, in regards to the vision, any general things you want parents to look out for in terms of if there is an eye injury after, if there's injury to the eye after a major blow to the head, like what are some common things that they might need to look out for? Because again, it might not be so obvious to them as it is to us.
Yeah, that's a great question, because according to the CDC, there are about 2 million cases of a traumatic brain injury or concussions happening each year in the United States. And many of them are also undiagnosed. Many of them may not go to the doctor. They feel like it is not major. So what we have seen is a lot of these people, they would come in initially for vision complaints, but when we talk more, it tends to be related to a previous head trauma or concussion, either recent or some time ago when they were young, either playing, falling, or involved in the sports. Yeah. So for specifically for vision, the research studies have found that as many as 80% of those with a post with concussion syndrome will have some visual components and symptoms. Some common symptoms include eye fatigue, especially difficulty with reading. When they read, their eyes hurt, they get headaches, they cannot read for beyond a few minutes. And when they read, the words will start moving on the page. It's very unsteady, very uncomfortable. And a lot of light sensitivity and even indoor lighting, yeah. So if any of those are happening, quite often we'll ask the parent or the child if you have had a bump to the head, neck, or back, either recently or some time ago, yeah. And once we know what the problems are, we can pinpoint the issues and prescribe the necessary treatment, yeah.
Yeah, this is really important because most parents don't know this, but 50% of children fall off of some sort of surface within the first year of life. And children don't necessarily complain of pain and whatnot, especially that young. They're not verbally communicative, but in a younger child, they might have changes in sleeping or changes in behavior or more sensitive to their surroundings. And so these are some of the things that parents can look for in younger children. And that's certainly what I see in my practice. So kind of bringing it back to this early development, what I want to try and get a picture of, because what we're trying to do here is optimize brain development and neurologic health. So rather than waiting till our child is older with learning issues, behavioral issues, or even if they are on the autistic spectrum, to try and look at what can we do for our children. Number one, in prevention, what are some things parents can do to help prevent eye issues? And number two, some things they can proactively do to help with eye health. So anything you can offer would be great.
Yeah, so you're exactly right. Prevention is probably the first step. And assuming they have been evaluated and rule out any problems, the second step will be the enhancement, what to do proactively to help to grow healthy. Yeah. So some suggestions that we typically would advise parents suggest could be to start with visual tracking activities. So very easy to do. You have toys, high contrast, colorful. And if you can incorporate a multi-sensory approach, meaning not just seeing it, but you make some noise about it. So you have the vision and auditory, have them touch it so they have the tactile feel component, and then to grab it accurately so there's a depth perception component too. So I think how you play the games can make a huge difference. Another one that's really good is a ball rolling on the floor, roll the ball to the child, and if they're old enough, they can push it back. It's really good for both eye tracking and the depth perception, as well as a basic gross motor eye-hand coordination. As far as other techniques, looking at the mirror, for the baby to observe themselves, try to reach, try to see the body symmetry, trying to see the reflection is always fun to do. As far as feeding, we want to encourage the parents to alternate the right and left side when feeding so that it will provide equal visual stimuli and minimize favoring just one eye. Yeah.
And you're talking about breastfeeding?
Yes, both.
But you want to feed on, what you're saying is feed on both breasts.
Yeah, when you're holding the baby.
Right. Or if you're bottle feeding, same thing. Don't always feed on the same side, right?
Exactly. So you do it half and half.
Good point.
Yeah, the baby get to see from different angle and be able to make the eye contact from a different direction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good point. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
So as developmental specialists, many people would consider and suggest not to use a walker and not encourage the the child to walk too early when they're not quite ready, because a crawling, as we all know, is an important stage in developing not just the balance, but the eye-hand, eye-body, and the eye coordination. Yeah.
Such a good point. And we've had doctors coming on talking about that importance of crawling as a milestone. And for so many things, as you said, including the visual, and also that near far accommodation as they start to kind of direct themselves where they want to go, they have to look from near to far. So many visual aspects. I love that you just talked about that milestone.
And actually, that leads into me asking, is there anything that you're seeing, especially in modern times, that parents are introducing their babies to that you feel doesn't help their eye development or can lead into some of these learning difficulties or developmental issues with the eyes? Like anything parents should probably avoid doing for at least a certain amount of time, maybe that 6 months or 12 months.
Yeah, I think overall, most healthcare professionals will agree for young child up to about 2 years of age to minimize the screen time. I think that's the biggest one we are seeing the last few years. We are seeing that a lot of parents would utilize an iPad or tablet to babysit the baby. Yeah. So our advice and encouragement is to minimize that as much as possible, and to be able to replace that with items that are three-dimensional, that they can reach, that they can grab, that they can develop the necessary eye-hand coordination, and also the human interaction component too, for the parent to talk to their baby about those toys. So this is green, this is patty cake, this is we're doing peekaboo, so they can actually understand and help develop the vision and the language at the same time. Yeah.
And the social emotional. Absolutely. But what is so bad? What I really want you to do is I want you to talk to parents, because like you said, they've got to do something or they're busy and they hand the baby their phone or the iPad. Why? I really think it should be zero, by the way, never mind minimizing, and really 0 to 3 years. But why is the iPad or the phone so bad for their eyes?
I think there are several potential reasons. One is the babies, as far as how the eyes are developing, they may not be able to sustain for a long time, at a close-up distance with screens that are often what we call pixelated, because most screens they're made up of super tiny dots, and visually our eyes are not always designed to focus clearly on those screens. I think that's why most of us, we have the experience when we read something on print, it is easier on our eyes than on the computer. So I sometimes do that for myself too, when preparing for lectures or studying an article or reading a journal. It is very stressful for me and tiring for me to read a PDF. But if I print it out, I have no problem. And that's because our eyes can focus much easier on the black and white on paper print than the pixelated image on the screen. Yeah. And also the angle and the posture is important too. Most of us, if we are reading, we will hold it and at an angle. It's not going to be straight, it's not going to be flat, but at an angle. And research from many years ago on visual ergonomics, meaning the visual posture, have found that certain angles are easier on our eyes visually than the other, which means when you read a page that you're holding or book you're holding, when you're reading the top line going through the middle of the page to the bottom line, it's a very smooth transition. Whereas most people doing screens, they tend to hold it either straight or flat on the desk. So the angles of change is quite different. Yeah. And we also notice most young kids especially if they're given a tablet, a device unsupervised, they would not hold it straight. They would lie on the floor. They would look at it from an angle. So again, those are not good visual postures and more likely to create visual stress. Yeah.
Okay. And what about the blue light from the screen?
Yeah. So
I know that the different lights affect our eyes differently. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so blue light refers to light on the spectrum that are on the lower wavelengths and more the blue, purplish light. And the scientific research have showed that the blue light have an impact on sleep pattern. Meaning it suppresses what we call melatonin, which is the hormone in the brain that would bring about sleep. So if someone is doing that either a lot, especially before sleep, it is something that would probably cause sleep disturbance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be one component. And the second component is a lot of scientists believe that the blue light can cause additional eye strain. And we have seen that in many of our patients who have been using computer all day long. And because of the lockdown, because of the online education, instead of a regular classroom, it's 5 or 6 hours of video conferencing, that their eyes are much more stressful than usual. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't need a study to tell me that the blue light coming off the screen and when I'm wearing my blue light blocking glasses, I have way much less stress on my eyes. So, you know, I know this is about from 0 to 3 development, but because of the situation, if we have listeners who have older children who are doing the Zoom calls, I'm going to sort of just expand a little bit out here. Because of the situation right now, we have children in front of a computer way more than they ever have been. And it's affecting their bodies in so many ways. And I just a little bit more for the eyes, some things that parents can do for their children to help decrease that eye strain. I just talked about light. I just mentioned blue light blocking glasses, or I know sometimes there are things you can get on the screen. Are there anything else that these children can do to help try to prevent specifically eye strain so that they don't then start developing eye issues on top of everything else?
Yeah, so there are several suggestions. One is within their room, make sure they have good lighting. I know sometimes children like to do it in the dark, so we want to avoid that. So good lighting is one. Secondly is, again, when the child is unsupervised, we see that a lot of times they like to lean on one side, to slouch, or to get too close on the screen. So to make sure there's a good head and body posture to be as straight as possible. And then thirdly is to be able to give the eyes a break. I know there's some students who like to do the online homework nonstop for hours. So a good way to remember is for every 20 minutes of computer work, take at least a 20-second break, yeah, and then look far away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, so changing that gaze from fixing the eyes at a certain distance to breaking that up to looking far away, because that creates a lot of the strain for looking at a particular one distance for a long period of time. Am I correct on that?
Exactly, to be able to relax the eyes instead of getting kind of stuck at a close distance, yeah.
And that's why, again, the iPad and the iPhone are so detrimental to a child's developing vision, because they're staring at the screen, probably in a weird posture for an extended period of time, usually longer. And especially for developing kids, 20 minutes is a long time, and not breaking it up by looking somewhere else.
Well, and I actually wanted to ask, since you've been doing this for 20 years, and I mean, obviously, the activities that children are going through during these times have changed drastically. Are you seeing an increase in the amount of learning difficulties, disorders,
vision
with vision problems, with the addition of this, you know, heavy screen technology, or is there no difference that you've noticed? Can you expand on that a little?
Yeah, so I think my over experience is as children are exposed to more screen time, where there's for playing, for gaming, or for school and online education, we are seeing more children suffering from vision problems. In particular, the last 6 months, a lot of parents bring their child in because prior to that, they either have no problem or minimal problem, but because of what they need to do 5-6 hours a day for schoolwork, in addition to the game time, they are noticing the visual problems. There are more eye strain reported to us. There are more eyes that are not aligned, that are drifting. There are more children who complain that they get headaches, or when they try to focus, the words are not steady on the screen, they're moving. So a lot more visual symptoms than in the past, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got quite a mountain to climb, because I'm sure probably your recommendation, you know, for that ideally would be less screen time. But I guess the strategy of changing because the near to far vision works with the muscles in your eye. That's what controls your pupil, is that reaction to the amount of light. Those muscles then act to either constrict the pupil or dilate. So your pupil will change also near to far vision. So if you've got those hours and hours of constant close vision, you know, it's like working out any muscle. If you don't use one, you also lose it, I imagine.
Yeah, so that's a great point, because as you know, eons ago, when people using their eyes, they weren't doing the same type of work, right? People were hunters, farmers. Most of the work is done outdoor. And the last 20 years, most of the work has become computer-based. Most of the work is done within an arm's length. So our eyes wasn't really designed to handle that work. And what happens is, you can also feel the amount of visual stress. Visual stress is the stress related to using your vision, especially doing close-up work. As we all know, stress is not good for the body. It causes hyperpressure, anxiety, or other disorders. So visual stress can trigger visual symptoms and visual disorders. And people respond to stress differently. Some would keep doing the work, suffer from it, but not becoming not very efficient. So these are the children who would be able to still do the work, but it would take a long, long time finishing it. Yeah. So compared to the friends or the siblings, they would take much more longer to finish the homework. It could be a struggle. Parents need to fight with them. Homework is always a battle. So they're not very efficient. It takes a long time to do it. And with a lot of stress, a lot of complaints, yeah. And
right.
Well,
and children aren't supposed to be stressed out like that. That's the entire point of being a child. We don't need to add more stuff on. And so that brings up a great point where, times are changing, and they're changing very, very rapidly in terms of what our bodies, you know, whatever you believe, whatever the body's design was intended to do, the changes that are being made now are a bit too fast for, you know, for our body to acclimate to it, not without a lot of stress. And so I wanted to ask a little bit about autism, because, and specifically are you seeing any specific vision issues with autism? I know that a common thing I hear is the lack of eye contact or the lack of eye connection in the gaze. Do you see any other, what kind of visual, issues do you see a lot with the autistic spectrum?
Yeah, and as we all know, the prevalence of autism has been increasing every year, and we are seeing a lot of children who is on the autistic spectrum, and everyone is a little bit different. We have some that are very high function, that most people would not be able to tell they have autism. And then we have some that are more severe, more complicated, with a lot of language delay and other developmental delays too. So everyone's a little bit different, but the common theme seems to be difficulty with making eye contact, just like you said. Some will have eye-hand coordination problem when they're writing. And a lot of our patients who have autism comes to us because they have eye tracking problems. And eye tracking problems specifically refer to if they are reading, instead of being able to read left to right smoothly, they will skip a word, miss a line, or read the same line over again. So by having the eye tracking problem, the reading becomes more challenging. Some of them may have a postural problems. They tend to lean forward. The balance is off-centered. So we'll determine if there's a visual balance problem, and we can prescribe either lenses or therapy to correct that if needed to. So it's a variety of diagnosis and treatment based on each individual.
Great. Well, where can we find you, Dr. Tong?
We are located in Pasadena. So I encourage anybody who is interested for more information is to go to our website. We have all the contact information, email address, phone number. And our website is tongvision.com. So it's all in one word. Tong would be my last name. T is in Tango, O is in Oscar, N is in November, G is in golf, the word vision.com. Yeah. So all our contact information will be there.
And if people are not in your area, is there another place that they can look to find someone who does similar things to what you do with children?
Yes. Quite often we have patients who have family members or friends in other state or countries who are looking for an optometrist to help with their child's vision development. So they could check out a couple of websites. One would be the College of Optometrists in Vision Development, COVD, C as in Charlie, O as in Oscar, V as in Victor, D as in Delta.org. COVD.org.
We're going to put all this info too in the description. So I'm making notes as we go. And is there another place they can look as well?
Yeah, another nonprofit organization is the Optometric Extension Program Foundation. It's the OEPF.org. O is in Oscar, E is in Echo, P is in Papa, F is in Foxtrot.org. Both of those websites have links to look for other providers in different states and countries. Yeah.
Great.
Fabulous. And do you have any last advice for especially any new moms or moms to be in regards to optometry or the field of vision that you would like to impart on them?
So I think final word would be for them to watch out for any signs and symptoms with the parents' instinct, the mom's instinct. If they see or feel something is wrong, then it's a potential problem. So feel free to reach out to my doctor so that we can provide consultation and advice. Yeah.
Fabulous.
Thank you so much for taking the time out today. I'm sure of your busy schedule. We really appreciate it. We know that this is going to be valuable information for our listeners out there.
Oh, yes. So welcome. Thank you for having me.
And we're back after having an amazing discussion with Dr. Tong, who specializes in vision therapies and optometry. So especially, he does say all ages, but he is one of the few in the area that we know of that really feels comfortable working with very, very young children and infants and babies. And as he was saying, his recommendation is actually to preventatively, as in maybe there's no visible signs that something is wrong or there is an issue, but preventatively bringing your baby in at about 6 months for an eye checkup. That way, if there is something that the optometrist spots, it's easier to head it off than to fix an already chronic issue.
And this is what's great about working with a team. So sometimes it does take a village to raise a child, and creating this network with Dr. Tong, I have a resource that if I see there's visual issues with patients that are not resolving with some of the exercises I'm giving, or the chiropractic and cranial sacral work that I do, then I have someone who I can refer to and we can work together as a team. So some of the things that I look for in young children is I am looking for what's going on with their eyes. I look at, are the eyes focusing together? Are they moving together? Or if one seems to be going out or in, and I will check and look at the cranial structure because the eyes have to sit within the cranial vault. I will look at what's going on with the neurology, the cranial nerves control what the eyes do. So there's actually 3 out of the 12 cranial nerves that control eye function.
And 2 of those nerves are only there for 1 each muscle of the eye. That's their entire function.
Yeah, eyes are pretty complicated. Yeah. They really are. And then there is an attachment with the eyes to our vestibular system. So knowing where our body is in space. So as we're walking, there's actually this really cool reflex that counteracts our eyes as they move, so you don't basically get seasick as you are walking. The eyes are pretty incredible. So another thing I check is if I think there's anything going on with the vestibular system, I might spin the baby or child and see what happens with their eyes once we stop spinning. And they should be going back and forth because they're looking to go, where am I? And there's a certain amount of time that this should happen. So I want to see it happen. I want it to be for a certain amount of time. If it's not there, it means that maybe the child's vestibular system is a little bit underactive. And then, of course, the near and far accommodation, looking to see if those eyes come together as an object comes in close to them and then go out as the object goes away. So all of this is controlled by the brainstem, which sits right inside the skull, right at the junction. There's a big hole there called the foramen magnum. And this is the sort of bridgeway between the spinal cord and the rest of the brain, our cerebrum. And in this brainstem, this is where babies are developing. And I've just this morning actually created this course for chiropractors along with another practitioner friend of mine. And I just did an hour session on milestones. And so with our brainstem, our primitive reflexes are located in the brainstem. This is the first part of our development because it's our survival and our ability to actually be born into the world are in these primitive reflexes that then develop into mature postural reflexes. So sometimes retained primitive reflexes are going to affect things like our vision, because if we are tied neurologically to these lower functions, then we're going to do things like, you know, we go to look at something and our arm will go out if we still have a retained asymmetric tonic neck reflex. So if a child is trying to focus on something and it's tied to body movement, they're not going to be able to keep their eyes together. If along the milestone track, they're not doing those milestones in a sequential order in a certain amount of time, that could then affect what's going on with their visual development. So vision is one of the first thing that starts to develop. It is not perfect when a baby is born. They have trouble focusing, except for a distance of 10 to 12 inches, which is about the distance with breastfeeding. Go figure, Mother Nature, right? Pretty perfect. And then they are gravitating more towards contrasts, as Dr. Tong was stating. And then also facial features. Babies love to look at the face. So that's your greatest source of entertainment and development vision-wise in a newborn baby and a very young baby. And then I can look at the milestones and see that development. And I know that if a child did not crawl, they are more likely to have visual problems. As Dr. Tong was talking about, the near-far accommodation, the eye-hand coordination. And all of these things play into how a baby's eyes are going to further development as they are growing, especially in these first few years of life. So this is why we were talking about use of electronic equipment with very young children. There's so many things it affects. We're focusing on the vision today, but that visual aspect of having that screen super close, their eyes fixated on it. And while this is all happening, guess what? They're not moving their bodies. So movement is necessary for brain development. So everything kind of goes around in a circle, right? Everything affects everything. It's this ripple effect, and the eyes and visual development are no different. Anything else to add, Dr. Toxel?
You summarized everything that I was going to add in. So
that was a lot, yeah. I know. But we hope that you've enjoyed this session today with us of your baby's brilliant brain. We hope that you share this with others because others need to have this information. It's not simply sticking some eyeglasses on your child. This is about what's going on with their brain. So please give us a great 5-star review, share it with your friends and family, and please subscribe to our channel so that you'll know when we release episodes. Typically, they're on Mondays and Thursdays, but you never know. We might have a rogue broadcast come out. So thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.